From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. It was last summer that the University of North Carolina at Wilmington said goodbye to Chancellor Gary Miller, who left for the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay after 3 years at UNCW. This summer, the Board of Trustees announced that José Zito Sartorelli would officially take the helm July 1st. Chancellor Sartorelli comes to Wilmington from West Virginia University, where he was the Dean of the College of Business and Economics. He was named WVU's first Chief Global Officer in 2013. Prior to his foray into higher education, Dr. Sartorelli worked with Johnson & Johnson as Pharmaceutical Group Chairman for Asia-Pacific, Japan, and Latin America. He also worked for Eli Lilly and Company for 5 years in Asia. He succeeds William Cederberg, who has served as interim chancellor for the last year. Dr. Sartorelli, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you have a question for UNCW's new chancellor? If so, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send your comments or questions to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Chancellor Sartorelli, if you discovered that you had limited time here, what's the one thing you'd want to accomplish, the one area you'd want to be sure that you impacted? What will we discover as your personal mission?
I think the number one priority would be continue to raise the quality of our programs. I think we have not only great students, but also great professors, and we are offering, in terms of academic offering, is first quality, first rate. If there's one thing that I would like to impact is to continue to raise the standards and to provide an excellent education to the sons and daughters of North Carolina.
We know that people are curious about your background, people who haven't yet met you. You are originally from Brazil?
Right. Correct.
And your name, José V. Sartorelli, where does Zito come from?
My full name is José Valentine Sartorelli. Zito came from, is a nickname that my mother gave me. I used to like soccer a lot. And in the 1958-1962 World Cup champions, Brazil was champions, well, Brazil was champions five times, in fact, but those two. And there was a midfielder, and his name was Zito. And so since I liked soccer and, you know, this person is very popular, my mom decided to call me Zito. So that became my nickname.
So yeah. Do you play soccer at all in your spare time?
I used to. Nowadays, it's a little tougher to play soccer at my, you know, growing age, so to speak, but it's a great game, yeah.
You've said that you want to have a strategic plan in place for the university by December. How are you going about that?
Well, first of all, I've been talking to a lot of people. I've looked at our current strategic plan that's been in place for some time, and we've been discussing with, faculty and staff and alumni and other folks. And so I took the chance to develop a straw man, so to speak, or a draft of a plan. I have now shared that plan with the steering committee of the Faculty Senate. I have shared it with the staff council. I have shared it with the Board of Trustees. In fact, on our website, there's a version of, audio version of it. And now we are transforming. In addition to the cabinet, we also have this leadership council, and so we are using the leadership council, which is made up of about 40 to 50 people from all over all the walks of life of the university, and these 50 people are going to take that draft and take to a different level. They're going to vet it. They're going to delete things from it. They're going to add things from it. They're going to really, do the job that, we have to do. We have to make sure that this has a first, a ground-up understanding and development. And so it's important for, the faculty and staff and other friends of the university and administrators to participate in this process. And we're beginning that process this very moment.
And what are some of the major components of that plan, of the draft plan?
Right. Well, as anything else, Rachel, I think strategic plans, normally you have to have a vision enunciated eventually. You'll have to have a mission. I add, in addition to that, as I've done that many times in my life, is you have to have a set of values that guides it, and then you have to define some strategic priorities with goals and metrics and owners and so on and so forth. I think not only has to be a compelling vision, but also very strong strategic priorities so that you can build your goals and objectives within those strategic priorities. And you know, strategic plans, they're only good as if they're implemented. Many strategic plans are not. They sit on a shelf and no one ever looks at it once it's finished. We want to make sure that ours is implemented, and therefore we have to have metrics, we have to have owners, people are going to be responsible for them, for some of the goals, et cetera. And then we're going to put them in place. And the strategic priorities, the execution of the strategic priorities are important because only by executing those priorities will ever get to the vision. And so, you know, they're kind of all together, vision, mission, strategic priorities.
And so what are some of those priorities then that are part of the draft?
And then again, this is just, you know, this is the contours of what we're going to end up with in the next few months. But things like, for example, a very important one is how do we go about attracting the best students, the best professors, the best staff, diverse, high talent. Second is how do we educate our students well? How do we provide them an exceptional experience in the classroom? And in addition to that, how do we advance research? And how do we, as we advance research, how do we translate that those findings into the classroom? Third strategic priority, very important to us, is not just to attract the best and educate them well, but how do we enable students to get jobs and or to pursue other things in their lives, like go for a PhD or a master's or whatever. A lot of institutions don't pay attention to that, but I think we have a responsibility not only to attract the very best, educate them well, but also enable them to get jobs. The fourth strategic priority, which I think goes very much in line with what we have been or we are as an institution, is engagement with the community. You know, this university started as Wilmington College in 1947. It was not a gift from the federal government, it was not a gift from the state, was not a, you know, a land grant. And so from the very beginning, there's this very strong symbiotic relationship with the city. And the final strategic priority is how do we fund all this stuff? How do we fund the vision? How do we fund the activities that we're going to pursue, et cetera? The state contributes about a third of our budget. Another third or so comes from tuition and fees. And the rest is private fundraising. So we're going to spend a lot of time on private fundraising because that's important. To build a great university, you have to have a commitment from the community, from your alumni, from friends of the university, to build to a different level.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. And Chancellor Sartorelli, you said that as part of that strategic plan, you'll need to have certain values that are guiding those priorities and the execution of those priorities. What are the values that you're talking about?
Well, I these are my values at this stage, and I want to make sure that then as I spend time with the team and or the sub-teams that we develop those that are very, you know, very much part of our university. One is diversity and globalization. I do believe that diversity is important, and diverse teams play better, are more successful. Globalization, because we are living in a very interconnected world, and so we have to, you know, either you join in or you do not. And I think North Carolina is the ninth largest economy in the United States. We have to be part of that. The second value, which I think is very dear to me, is ethics and integrity. I think, you know, it's very hard to teach ethics as such, but I think we have to impart to our students that ethics and integrity is very important. And the final one is excellence and innovation. Everything we do, we should be excelling at whatever, everything we do. And, you know, we don't get up in the morning, on Monday morning, to be lousy. We get up in the morning to be good, to be excellent. And so we have to make sure that everything we do at the university has to achieve a level of excellence that's, special.
UNCW recently hired its first chief diversity officer.
Right.
Is that sort of a different idea from what you're talking about in terms of of making the campus a much more global place, expanding the global footprint, or will that play into what
you're... They'll play into it very much so. I think it was very wise by my predecessors to have done that, and we have a gentleman now in that position, Kent Guyon, which is going to help us do that. And also to raise the sensitivity. Sometimes we forget that, you know, our teams are not very diverse. As part of this effort, for example, one of the things we're going to be asking is that every time there's an opening in administration and different parts of the university, we're going to make sure that we produce and develop a diverse slate of people. Because if you don't have diverse slates of candidates for administrative positions, you're never going to get diversity in the university or an institution.
What would constitute a diverse slate of candidates?
It has to be diversity in terms of gender, has to be ethnicity, and in addition to that, diversity of thought. Sometimes we look at color, we look at gender, we look at orientation, et cetera, but we forget diversity of thought, and I think that's important too. So those are some of the examples. And we'd like to have a more diverse, organization, more diverse administration, more diverse student body, because it's the, quote-unquote, it's the picture of the world of tomorrow.
And you were WVU's first chief global officer.
Yeah.
So how does expanding the global footprint of UNCW come into play here?
Right. Well, I think, it's almost like the mountain does not come to you, you go to the mountain. And so in this case in particular, I think if we can create a more diverse classroom experience with greater diversity from within, from students from here as well as from international, why not? I think that would be very good for us as we go forward.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli. If you'd like to ask him a question or make a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. And when we come back, we'll read a couple of listener emails. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio today, Chancellor Zito Sartorelli of the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Today, we're learning more about the strategic plan that's under development and which priorities Dr. Sartorelli considers to be at the top of the university's list. If you have a question for the Chancellor, now is your chance to ask it. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have a question from Mike, who writes, Dr. Sartorelli, now that a new school year has begun, many UNCW students are crossing College Road either as pedestrians or on bicycles. New apartments on Randall Parkway have added even more traffic, crossing 8 lanes of College Road traffic each day. The intersection of Randall and College is already unsafe, one of the top 10 intersections for collisions in Wilmington. In the past, a pedestrian bridge was proposed over College Road to alleviate this risk, but the project didn't appear to get off the ground. Given the volume of traffic at the front side of the campus, something needs to be done. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, thank you very much for the question, Michael. That is an area of concern for us, no question about it. I'm just going to take my time to evaluate it, to see exactly the type of pattern flows that we see, the traffic flows. I know that there have been some attempts in the past to build it. And I also realize that in many cities where those were built, many times the pedestrians don't use it. And so it's not that simple solution, but I think we may have to, short term, we may have to reinforce the signage. We have to, make sure that we make that aware of our students. And in fact, we're communicating with our students all the time. I'm going to be revisiting some of the suggestions that were made in the past and the projects that we had to see that because we want to make sure that we have a safe, extremely safe environment for our students.
And we also have a question from someone in the UNCW MFA group. He writes, Since 1987, universities and colleges have added more than 520,000 jobs that neither teach nor conduct research, while at the same time shifting the balance of the teaching load to cheaper, exploited labor in the form of adjunct and part-time faculty. What are Chancellor Sartorelli's thoughts on earning an annual salary of $350,000 in a position that does not directly contribute to the intellectual or educational life of the university, while departments are increasingly scrambling to find adequate funding for professor and graduate student-led research and providing nationally competitive salaries for tenure and tenure-track positions, especially when it comes to faculty in the arts?
Well, I think, first of all, I think I'm as sensitive to the needs of our professors and staff as the next person, and I am very concerned about it. One thing that we have to make sure that we do is that we, in most of our classes, in fact, this is when you talk to faculty at our school, at our university, they'll tell you that, is that there's been always an emphasis on using tenure-track professors to teach most of our classes. We do employ some lecturers, some instructors in some areas, but not as many as many other campuses. It's not the perfect solution in the sense that we still have some, but we want to make sure that we pay them competitively to the marketplace and as much as possible. Another concern that people have raised sometimes is that, okay, we have had an expansion of staff positions and not as much as faculty. I think that has not been the case in our university. I know it has been the case in many other institutions, including my previous one. That was a concern we had. The only thing I can assure you, we're going to be extremely watchful to that, even though knowing that both staff and faculty are very contributory to the success of the university. It's not just we could not live without our staff, nor could we live, obviously, without our faculty. Both are very important to the advancement of the university. And the administrators are, too. It's not as if you could run a large institution like ours with more than 2,000 employees, 15,000 students with a very small cadre of people. Just can't do it. And so, but I think the caller is correct in the sense that we should be very sensitive to the needs of our faculty and staff. We should pay them as well as we can with the limitations that are typical of a state institution.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send emails to coastline@whqr.org. And speaking of the creative writing program, we do have several graduate fellows who are part of WHQR here, including this show's producer, Isabel Shepherd. And so we are hyper aware of the creative writing program as one of the crown jewels at UNCW. Also, marine biology certainly gets a lot of international recognition. In fact, I think there was recently an article published in National Geographic using UNCW's marine biology research talking about whether whales get the bends.
Right.
And New York Times bestselling author Wiley Cash recently said when he mentions he's from Wilmington as he travels around the country, there's often a recognition about the quality of the creative writing program. Is that something that you will continue to hold up as a priority during your tenure?
Yes, very much so. I think no university is good at everything. And so we'll have to recognize and understand what areas we're very good at. And how can we develop and make ourselves even better? And I was at a picnic with the creative writing department and folks in school. And what I noticed is that, they have this, they were telling me, for a few years ago, we decided to become very good and we wanted to become tops. And so I would like to have all the departments feeling the same way. How do we want to become very good? Now, to become very good, it means two things, at least from my perspective. One, you have to have great professors, and we have them, and we've been able to attract great professors to that department. And you also have to have great students. And that combination of great professors and great students is what makes for a great university. In addition to that, you have to add in facilities and so on and so forth. But so I would like to have As you may know, nonfiction creative writing program at the university has been ranked number third best in the country, and that's terrific. Even when you include fiction, it's still in the top 50 in the country in total. So I think we want to have more departments like that. And every effort will be made, both in terms of finding donations for endowed chairs to attract great professors, to find more scholarships to attract great students, because that combination of great students, great faculty makes for a great university.
And speaking of arts and writing, your immediate predecessor, Interim Chancellor William Cederberg, spoke with us on this show and was talking about some of the changes happening right now within the university system and how, as you mentioned earlier in this show, students need to become more employable. They need to be ready for challenges in the workplace. And he said that universities will have to start addressing some of the weaknesses in liberal arts education. Do you agree with that idea? And what are the weaknesses in the liberal arts program as it's set up?
I think, first of all, we have a great liberal arts education program. We will continue to have it. I think it's not exclusionary. In other words, we have great schools around this country that have great liberal arts programs as well as professional schools. And you can have both. And by the way, in my life working with large companies, I also met very successful people who were not business degree majors. They were not engineers. One of them, in fact, was a major in history, and went to the top of the company. So I don't think that a great liberal arts background, either in the humanities or languages or whatever, is as good as anything else in terms of preparing you for life. I'm all for preparing people for life, but life a little more comprehensively than just a job. So I think it's very, when my students are coming in, I'm telling them three things. One, apply yourself, study hard. Second, give flight to your imagination. Become a better person. Learn a language. Go overseas. Do study abroad. Play sports if you so desire. And finally, network, network, network. So I think I don't see as if, there's big holes in liberal arts as far as the job market. I don't think so. I think we should, in liberal arts, we should continue to have great programs. And for those people who decide to go into the profession, should also have great professional programs. You can have both. And successful universities have to have both.
And you brought up sports and the importance of that in a student's
right.
life. You recently made the decision to save UNCW's track and field program that had been on the chopping block for a while. So now that that's permanently saved, tell us sort of about the status of that program, why you made that decision.
Well, first of all, and I don't consider myself a savior of anything. Some decisions had been made. When I came in, I realized that there was a great devotion in the community as outside the community to support the program. We had more than 800 people donating to the monies that were gathered, collected to save the program. As I've mentioned in other venues, track and field is like fundamental to sports. The first Olympic Games in Greece, before Christ, in fact, track and field was part of it. And so I felt it was important to continue it. And there's some challenges ahead, including renovating our track. And I'm quite sure we're going to find well-meaning individuals in the community and outside the community to help us do that. And to have, 50 or 60 or 70 or whatever the number is of our students doing that, I think it's great. Because, for me, athletics is a complementation. The students come in here to study and to apply themselves to be students, and they complement themselves. They give flight to their imagination becoming athletes. But the dyad student athlete is the emphasis should be on the students first, because if they do that and then they go into sports and learn leadership skills and team building sports teach you a lot of that. Sportsmanship, that prepares them greatly for life. Even they may not play professionally in anything, but it's going to prepare them for life, and that's very important.
And the track and field program was also identified as one of the more diverse athletic programs, as
right.
racially diverse, ethnically diverse.
Right. Yeah, it's very diverse. We have some other programs also very diverse, and that certainly is important. But we're very proud of the programs we have, all the way from from volleyball to soccer to baseball to basketball, track and field, and we're very proud of that. And I don't know if people have mentioned to you, but you probably know, is we have one of the most successful baseball programs in the country. Our coach, Mark Scaff, has done a wonderful job. We've been ranked number 10th best in terms of how much we spend behind the programs and as to their success. So I think with our coach now in Kevin in basketball, I think we're going to have another great season this year. And one of the things I'm challenging them, so look, wouldn't it be wonderful in our 19 or 18 programs that we have that we eventually end up with a national title someday? And we have to think big. And with the right amount of inspiration and support and talent, why not?
National title in basketball?
In whatever, at Western University, for example, they had never gotten a national title, but they had one title in rifling. They're very good in rifling, in shooting. And so they're, 10 years national champions. So we'll probably have to target and identify an area that we're going to be very good at it and be very good at it and get national acclaim. And so if it is in basketball, so much better. If it is in, soccer or baseball, terrific. But I think that's the type of aspiration we have to have. But aside from that, we are in the business of not only preparing our students professionally for their lives, but also we are in the business of preparing citizens for life.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Jim sends us an email. He says, given the current politicians in Raleigh's record of weakening education on all levels in the state, can we see less money? I think he means, can we expect to see less money coming to UNCW? The chancellor mentioned that 30% of the budget comes from the state, and there's going to be a strong effort to raise money from other means. Does this mean the state will provide less money in the future?
I hope not. I think in talking to our representatives and our senators in Raleigh, and I've been visiting there with some frequency, I see that there's a great disposition to continue to help higher education. They're also going to be demanding from us more accountability to some extent, and that's okay, because after all, we're all taking care of, we're using taxpayers' money. So I do believe that the system, the North Carolina system, has been a very good system, and compared with other states, we've done relatively well. Now, have we been under quote-unquote frugal policies? Yes, we have. But compared with other states, we've done very, very well to continue to support higher education. And I'm telling some of the legislators is, look, not to support higher education compromise our future. And it's important that we continue to support it.
Okay, well, that's also something that your predecessor, Interim Chancellor William Cederberg, talked about extensively. In fact, he's working with a national organization, I think it's the Association of Colleges and Universities,
right.
And he talks about aligning the priorities of the university system with the priorities of the state,
right.
As you just mentioned. So how do you do that? How do you make that case with state leaders, if
right.
that's a case that needs to be made?
Right. I think in talking to people have the idea that, these legislators are, they're aiming ill or thinking that, we want to destroy the system. No one wants to destroy the system. I think there's a very, very well-meaning and constructive individuals in Raleigh from both parties. But they also want more accountability. Is that we don't have unlimited resources. So they're coming to us and, look, what can you do to, be more productive, be more efficient in whatever you do? And we have to respond to that, too. And those are the things that universities are have to in this day and age to respond to. It's the challenges of, quote-unquote, of limited resources and so on and so forth. So for example, one thing that they measure, it's student credit hour. If you teach on the measured by student credit hours, the state will support you, and they have so far. Now, will they continue to do it? I hope so, and we were going to be making the case that's important to do it. You know, we have in this state gone, we have seen three major industries, tobacco, textile, and furniture, disappear or get very small. The state, because of its universities and because of the inventiveness of our citizens, we've basically renovated ourselves, and we have now a great financial service industry. We have a great high-tech industry. We have a very strong agricultural business in the animal side, particularly. We have a great, hospitality and tourism business. So the state has been, thanks to its education as well as other major initiatives, we've been able to reinvent ourselves very well. And so I think education, higher education, allows us to do even more of that, to reinvent ourselves for the future, for the economies of the future, in fact.
Over the last year or two, there's been a great deal of turnover at UNCW, and so you are coming in, and we're going to break in about 90 seconds, but you're coming in with almost a clean slate in a lot of ways, and some of those positions, those key positions, have been getting filled. Where is that process, and what positions will we start hearing about in the very near future that will be filled?
Sure. We have filled most of the positions now. I'm looking now for a chief of staff, in fact, and we're in the final process of it. But I also want to mention the fact that we have lost some people. A lot of those losses were for a good cause. A lot of people moved up, became presidents of other universities, became two of them, in fact. The provost became president of a very good school, SUNY Geneseo, one of the best liberal arts colleges in the country, in fact, university in the country. And the dean of the business school also became a president, chancellor somewhere else. So I think the reasons have been good so far.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a conversation with UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli. We're about to go to a brief break, and we have one segment left for you to ask him a question or make a comment. Give us a call at 910-343-1138, as Tori has done. And when we come back from the break, we'll talk with her. We'll take a short break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio, once again, UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli. If you'd like to ask him a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. And Tori, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, and welcome to Wilmington, Dr. Sartorelli.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm an alumnus and also adjunct faculty at Cameron School of Business for the past dozen or so years. And I was wondering if you have any plans. I have a great deal of respect for your business background. Do you have any plans to combine the efforts of the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, the Small Business Technology and Development Center, and the business school?
Thank you very much for this question. I think... first of all, I think both the CIE, or the Center for Innovation Entrepreneurship, and the initiatives in entrepreneurship in the college are well regarded and well managed. I think we have to work more closely together. I know that at one point the CIE or versions of it were more located with the college, but now it's at the level of the university. What I've done in other places, what I've seen also in other places, a very close collaboration between the Office of Technology Transfer on one hand and the College of Business and the process of how do we do that together. So I think one of the things I'm thinking about, in fact, would bring the two, the college as well as the CIE, together very much is I'd like to initiate a business plan competition to encompass our prosperity zone where we are located, the southeastern part of North Carolina, where we would have coaches, we would have business people helping our students. We could do that together with the community colleges, and we could even reward these students at the end with a certain amount of money to get their business started. We could again get these students into our incubator that's part of the CIE. So I think, there's got to be a lot more collaboration across campus, both, between the colleges, among the colleges themselves, as well as the centers and the colleges and so on and so forth. So I don't see any way or form that the... In addition to that, I've been very interested in expanding entrepreneurship teaching in the College of Business. One of the things I did in my previous institution was to allow students to take, even though they're in the business school, to take also as a minor entrepreneurship in some schools. And I don't know exactly our situation here, is that if you're getting a major in finance, you cannot get a minor in entrepreneurship. But if you are in biology coming in from outside the college, you can. And so that's something that we have to think about changing, because if I'm a major in finance, I would like to have a minor in entrepreneurship, and why not? And so, or even, eventually turn entrepreneurship like it is, it's already a major, so you could even a dual major, so a major in finance and also in entrepreneurship. So I, in conclusion, the college have to collaborate a lot more. The centers have to collaborate a lot more. And I don't see, and I want to make sure that the CIE is reaching out to the business school big time. I know they're already collaborating. They have to collaborate even more, because it's fundamental that, that the Cameron School works very closely and supports very closely the CIE for success. But there will be things that, only, for example, you cannot learn entrepreneurship anyplace else on the campus except for in the College of Business. And I think that's important to do that because if we're going to duplicate entrepreneurship courses all over the campus, we cannot afford to do it. I think it should stay in the business school. We should expand it, and we should collaborate very closely with CIE.
And that is a very logical idea, but people become, they seem to naturally become insular. Departments become insular. Organisms become insular. How do you foster collaboration? How do you make sure that continues to happen?
I'm a strong believer in leadership. And if you have, if you set the tone at the top and you get your, you convince your deans to do it, you will get that response. These things just don't happen naturally. One of the things I used to characterize my previous institution also was, we had this several colleges, and they were like ships with their lights off navigating in the dark with no collaboration among them. And so we have to collaborate a lot more. In fact, in business, that's something that we should learn from business. Companies collaborate all the time. They exchange technologies, they sell products, they do all kinds of stuff together. And many times, colleges on one campus cannot do it. And so I think we have to move away from the insularity and be more collaborative across the board. Now, the business school in particular and the computer science program now have been for some time now working together very closely. So that's wonderful. So you have two colleges, arts and science, in the computer science department, working with the business school and offering, in fact, they offer a master's in analytics where the two colleges are collaborating. We like to see a lot more of that. In my previous institution, I developed at least six of those cross-campus, cross-college programs with one idea in mind, is to turbocharge one's career before they leave campus. Think of this, a Master of Science in nursing, tomorrow getting an MBA. Wonderful. Nurses, as they move up in a hospital, they will take on roles of supervisors, directors, etc. And many times they're missing the business component. They don't know as much about accounting, finance, marketing, etc. So we should be doing everything we can through our colleges to turbocharge our students' career prospects.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli. If you have a question or a comment, you have about 10 minutes left to get that in. Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And taking a little bit of a turn here, this morning, Reuters published a story about New York State launching a specialized police unit to help crack down on sexual assault on college campuses. And the U.S. Department of Education is currently investigating 131 schools for violating federal law in their handling of those kinds of allegations. We've heard a lot of national discussion about the role of campus police in some of these serious crimes. How is UNCW doing on that front? And how do you see the role of UNCW's police force versus local law enforcement, like Wilmington Police Department and the Sheriff's Office?
At least from my understanding, they collaborate very closely, the two institutions. But I think I'm going to address the first question that you asked, or the first component of your question, which is even more important. We should not allow on campus any predatory behavior against our students of any kind, by anybody. And so I think we have to be very clear about that. And one of the things that we also have to do is to make sure that reporting is in place, that safe venues for reporting are in place and available to students, so that, you know, men or women on campus are safe. I think that's very fundamental. And coming from the top, and I'm talking about as the chancellor, predatory behaviors are not going to be allowed, period. Now, it is important for us to report and report quickly. And some of this reporting has to take place involving our police department because these can be or may be criminal acts that have to be addressed. And so I think we have several venues, and this is one of the things that our student affairs department has developed, that people can very safely and in confidence report these events so that can be addressed very quickly.
UNC System President Tom Ross recently announced that UNC Chapel Hill will be leading the Coastal Resilience Center of Excellence. This is a five-year, $20 million project funded by the Department of Homeland Security. And the Daily Tar Heel reports that Ross says this will have particular importance, of course, for coastal communities. It's in the name. What is this? And what's it going to mean for this area and for UNCW?
Well, I think we're still in the early stages of understanding exactly what it means, what is aimed to accomplish. But at the end of the day, I think we live in a coastal community, and the things that affect us are unique, and we have to be very sensitive to our environment. We have to be very sensitive to the industries that are developed in a coastal, and many times some of the coastal areas are very fragile. So both from an environmental standpoint as well as from a security standpoint, those are things that are going to be factored in. This is still in the very early stages of development, and we'll know more about implications to us as we move along.
You're listening to Coastline, talking with UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli, and we have Don from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey there. I have a question for the Chancellor. I'm a member of Greek class here at UNCW, and in the last 3 years, it's been a pretty tumultuous time. I believe that we've had three different Greek class directors and have seen four different chapters get kicked off the campus. So I want to see what the Chancellor is going to do to foster Greek class in the future.
That's a great question.
Right.
Chancellor Sartorelli.
That was Don, right?
Yes.
Thank you very much for calling in. I think I see the role of the Greek organizations, both sororities and fraternities, very important. They play a very important role in educating and in providing leadership venues for the development of our young men and women on campus. But I think I do also believe that there are certain things that we should be doing, which are to treat each other with dignity and respect. And so, for example, if either at a sorority level or a fraternity level, things are happening which are not appropriate, that are not in line with our Seahawk code of behavior, which is treat people with dignity and respect. If those things are not being fulfilled, we will have a problem with it. And so I want to make sure that I encourage the sororities and fraternities on campus to be very, very successful. We want to support them, and we will. But at the same time, I think we are in the business of helping young men and women to grow and become, successful citizens. And I think the Greek organizations themselves do police themselves a lot, and which is good. They also have their codes of conduct, etc. And you're going to have in this chancellor a very sympathetic set of years to what Greeks can represent or do and help us on campus. But at the same time, I think I'm going to be emphasizing a lot that, I will treat my young men and women as young adults, and we should act as such.
Thanks so much for your call, Don. And we have Ernest from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I would like to just ask the chancellor, or make the comment, here in the Wilmington area, we're seeing a lot of money going out to education as far as Cape Fear Community College. We're trying to figure out where all that money went for things, and a lot of it doesn't seem to be education. And now I understand here with UNCW, we've got a chancellor at a salary of $350,000. I'm sure a very good benefit package, and I'd like to know, is he now also part of the state of North Carolina retirement plan and what that actually comes down to in dollars and cents? At $900 a day, I really hope this is the individual that the educators think they need. And I just don't understand why there was no one within the system that could fulfill the mission he's been given. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call, Ernest. Chancellor Sartorelli, you raised ethics and integrity earlier as one of the values that you want to impart to the student body and that you want to be guiding the implementation of the strategic plan on campus. And Don had called earlier raising the question about Greek life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talked again about how important it is for students to treat one another with respect. How can a chancellor impart those values to the student body? How do you go about doing that in a practical way?
Several ways. First, in my cabinet, we talk about that all the time, and we discuss whether we have the venues within the system, within the university, to allow people to report on or incidents or behaviors which are not appropriate. Or, at the same time, how do we encourage, through our conversations and visit with students, how do we encourage the right behavior? And so I think, I'm a believer that there is right and wrong in the world and that we should be helping our students along and making sure they understand it. One of the things I like to do, in fact, would be, like I did in my previous school, is to develop in the undergraduate program particularly several course or a couple of course at least that everyone is exposed to in ethics and integrity. And how do you do that? Now, it's very hard to teach ethics because it comes from birth, it comes from family, it comes from friends and all kinds of stuff. But we should be making our students and our young men and women aware that the world out there is filled with temptations. And there's some good ones, and there's some very bad ones. And so how do you make sure they understand the difference? There's a right and wrong in life, and they should follow the high road, so to speak, and across the board. And so how do we do that? By talking. Now, I'm very interested in working with our faculty to see whether we could build a specific program in ethics that would be offered as part of our undergraduate program. Like I had in my previous university was terrific. And in addition to that, we coupled that with corporate social responsibility. So you had the teaching of ethics on one hand and corporate social responsibility on the others, on the other, and that it just was terrific. Now, was it perfect? No, it was not perfect, but it was a major effort in making sure that, in addition to teaching technical skills, we're also imparting values. This is all part of this value that I was referring to in the very beginning.
Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank UNCW Chancellor Zito Sartorelli for joining us today. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who emailed in your comments. Join us for Coastline every Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Coastline is produced by Isabel Shepherd. Our technical director is Ken Campbell. Our webmaster is Melissa Stone. If you missed part of this show, we'll post it on our website, whqr.org, later today. You can also download the podcast from iTunes, and there you can find podcasts of earlier shows. Thanks again for listening. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.